Hello, everyone. Happy Sunday, and hi, Cheryl. It's nice to see everyone. The first link that I'm going to provide for you just to look at if you want to is a link to my events page. It's at reginadonakers.com/events. One thing that I added to the events page today is the pilgrimage to India. So that has just been added today. That will be in November. We'll actually be in India November 2nd through 20th. But if you're leaving from the United States, the inclusive part of the trip may be November 1 to 21st because of the amount of time it takes to travel to and return from India. So if you're interested in the Indian pilgrimage, please have a look at that. Also, I'll be in Santa Barbara May 10, 11, and 12. Cheryl Valentine has invited me out. She's my hostess. Teddy Poppy is also involved. And we're having what they're calling an intimate gathering with Regina, I believe. And what we really intend to do in this particular weekend is to be extremely spontaneous, to really allow spirit to lead the entire weekend. I expect it to be, just magnificent. So if you're interested in coming to Santa Barbara with us in May, also have a look. And then the other events are there as well. So again, that address was reginadonakers.com/events. And I think it's 3 weeks from today I leave on the next Israel pilgrimage. We have 12 people going to Israel. And as you all probably know, we'll be hiking the Jesus Trail, which is a four-day walk from Nazareth to Capernaum. So I'm looking forward to that. Right now we're here for the 7 Steps to Awakening. And we're going to begin with number 481. So I'm going to give you a link to 481. I'll post that in the room. For people who are listening on the radio, if you want to go to 481, go to RDA7. That is the digit 7. It is not spelled out. RDA7stepsjournal.wordpress.com. And when you get to the 7 Steps Journal, then you want to click on Step 2. You can either do it on the menu bar or on the right-hand side. You can find Step 2, and underneath Step 2, then click on the numbering sequence that will allow you to find your way to number 481, because that's where we're beginning tonight. And what I would like to do first, before we go and look at number 481, is have a moment of silence. So if you would, please join me. Amen. All right, so I'm going to begin by reading from the book, The 7 Steps to Awakening, quote number 481, which is coming from the Supreme Yoga, Yoga Vasistha. And this is the quote. Besides this, there are other universes of which I have not told you. For of what use is investigation into the nature of the world and others which are but of the nature of a dream? Wise men do not waste their time talking about useless things. If there's one thing that the seven steps did for me, it gave me an extremely keen discernment between what is true and what is false. And I'm really grateful for that keen discernment. I know that you all, if you've listened to me teach the seven steps, you've heard me talk some about it. But there are fantastic ideas that sometimes capture our attention when we're on the spiritual path. And they capture our attention as if they are true. You know, some of these ideas have to do with, for example, aliens and how aliens may be involved in our spiritual awakening. You know, I've even heard stories that Jesus was actually artificially inseminated into Mary by aliens. And of course, you know, now we're past it. We're in 2013, but the stories of what was supposed to happen in 2012, you know, really captured a lot of people's attention and imagination for a few years. And I'm sure there will be other stories that will come to be. But one thing I got from the seven steps was a very keen discernment on the difference between what is true and what is false. And I'm really grateful for that keen discernment because it seems now that I don't have that confusion that is very common in believing that certain spiritual things or certain spiritual stories or certain spiritual ideas are a part of truth. I understand that the fact that it's a spiritual story doesn't change the fact that it's a story. Going back to the quote, Yoga Vasistha is saying, "Besides this, there are other universes of which I have not told you. For of what use is investigation into the nature of the world and others, which are but of the same nature of a dream? Wise men do not waste their time talking about useless things." There was a video I shared with a few friends recently. I don't remember things. It was a lady named... Oh, here we are. Yay, I have her name written down on my desk, which is wonderful because I never would have remembered her name otherwise. It's a lady named Ellie, E-L-L-I-E, Bruzdar. B-R-O-O-Z-D-A-R. And I'll write that in the room for people. Ellie Bruzdar. And if you go on YouTube at some point and search for Ellie Bruzdar, search for her Buddha at the Gas Pump interview. She's actually done two interviews. And I've seen both, but the one I'm particularly pointing to right now is the first Buddha at the Gas Pump interview with Ellie Bruzdar. One thing that I really appreciated about her was that as a part of her awakening process, she seemed to acquire a very special healing power. And she talks about this very special power. And you know, you can imagine how exciting it must have been to discover this power. It was exciting probably for her, and it was exciting for people around her. But at one point in her story, she went to see a monk because, I can't remember the details now, but there was some kind of an obstacle to her being able to fully use this power. And she went to this monk because she had the idea that he would be able to help her clear away the channel, so that she was no longer blocked. And if I remember correctly, he did do that. But then he also told her that the power itself And of course, these are not the exact words. You can go watch the interview if you want to hear her words. That the power itself was not particularly special because it was not truth. And what he recommended was that she not get caught up in her special power, that that would be nothing but a huge distraction, and instead that she seek to find out who she really was. And what's really wonderful about her story is she did just that. And she also had many, many other, quote, phases of awakening seem to occur. And you know, I think that many times when people have some of the experiences that she had along the way, you know, that there's this idea that comes up in the mind that says, I'm done. I'm done. I'm awake. And somehow she was able to not listen to any of those ideas and just continue and continue and continue on this spiritual path until she did achieve what I'm going to call some true level of awakening, which would not have happened if she had got caught up in her special power or had gotten caught up in these shifts that occurred along the way. Again, the quote that we're looking at is, besides this, there are other universes of which I have not told you. For of what use is investigation into the nature of the world and others, which are but of the nature of a dream? Wise men do not waste their time talking about useless things. So there is a wisdom that keeps us from getting caught up in what I'm going to call the spiritual fantastic, or the spiritual special, or the spiritual entertaining. And it appears to me that it's that wisdom that's being spoken of here in quote number 481. So why don't we go and look at my journal and see what I wrote after contemplating this particular quote. Number 481. Where is the mind's attention to be directed now? This is an inquiry that arose during my contemplation. Within, on beingness and intuition only. Why? Because if mind's attention is directed outwardly with interest, the misperception that perception is reality persists. You know, talking about Elie Bruesdahl and this special healing power that she seemed to acquire and had a lot of success with, which you'll hear in her story, that would excite so many people. So many people would really think that something fantastic had happened in the acquiring of this power and in her ability to heal. But I think that what we don't understand when we get confused by such fantastic symbols is that we're still thinking somehow that perception is reality, that perception matters. If there really is a significant difference for us between a healthy body and a sick body, then we actually still have emphasis on perception. As we place our emphasis more and more in the inward direction, with what we truly are, we start to notice that there is an us, an I, a what I am, that is not affected by the body. So it doesn't matter whether the body appears to be sick or whether the body appears to be healthy. This isness remains the same. And it's really focusing on that isness that awakens us. Even if we get caught up in the fantastic, miraculous of healing, if we really give our attention to that and really get caught up in that, that itself becomes a distraction. Because the attention is outward with interest. I've told the story many, many times about Muji's teaching about the yogini, this painting that Cheryl Valentine gave me, which I have here as a constant reminder, and how the yogini, or yogini, the yogini awakened by not getting caught up in the fantasticness of the experiences, the seemingly fantastic spiritual experiences she had during meditation. As these fantastic spiritual experiences occurred, instead of getting caught up in the fantastic, she kept looking even more in at what was seeing these experiences. Who am I? I've also told you a story before about a man who was a devotee of Ramana Maharshi, and he asked permission of Ramana to go and sit in a cave and meditate. And of course, Ramana gave him that permission. And he went and he sat in this cave to meditate. And if I remember the story correctly, he was there for many years. At one point during his meditation, he saw a temple burning in his mind. He saw a temple burning. And shortly after that, someone came and told him that indeed the temple was on fire. And he became very excited because he realized he had acquired the power of seeing. We might call it clairvoyance. He was so excited by this power that he left his cave and he ran down to Ramana Maharshi to tell him, you know, this reward of his years of meditation. And Ramana simply said to him, "Why did you leave the cave?" This is the type of keen discernment that I'm talking about. The discernment that all perception is meaningless, unreal, and a distraction from that which is true. And no matter what appears to be happening on the outside, no matter what fantastic spiritual experience appears to occur, even if we seem to be visited by gods, in our world visited by Jesus himself, the best practice is not to be too taken by that. The best practice is to continue to seek in the direction away from perception. That's where awakening occurs. So you can scroll down underneath 481 and click on number 482. Or if you weren't already in the journal and would like to be, I am posting a link in the room, which you can look at. First, I will read quote 482 from the book The Seven Steps to Awakening. When self-knowledge arises, and this is the capital S self, when self-knowledge arises, the illusory notion of a world existence vanishes. When self-knowledge arises, the illusory notion of a world existence vanishes. All right, let's look at 482 in my journal, and it looks like, again, an inquiry arose as I contemplated quote 482. And the inquiry asked, "Is the world perceived?" And the answer is yes. "Is it known to exist?" And the answer is no. And this, by the way, was really focused on a lot in last Sunday's teaching, so I know some of you heard it, where we really talked about the difference between perception, which is an indirect experience because it's only experienced through the senses and then also through the mind. And then our beingness or our isness or our existence, which is a direct experience. We don't even need the senses to be aware of our isness. We don't even need the mind to be aware of our isness. It's so incredibly direct. It has no filters. It goes through nothing. And so because the world is perceived, because it's filtered by both the mind and the senses, and it's not the direct experience of isness, there's not direct knowledge that the world exists. So that's why this question says, is it known to exist? And the answer was no, because this has already been demonstrated for me through previous inquiry. Is the idea of world existence reflective of fact or reflective of belief? That idea is clearly a reflection of belief, since world existence as a fact cannot be known. It can only be believed. And of course, many people believe that they know the world exists because they see it, they smell it, they touch it, they taste it, they hear it. But again, it's being filtered through the senses. I shared this the other day, so for some of you this will be a repeat story, but after my teaching last Sunday night, Danielle was here with me listening to the teaching, and she was confused because I talked about how the world is only perceived and it's not a direct experience, and therefore we don't know, we don't have direct knowledge that it exists. It's a belief, as this says, it's not a fact. And after the teaching, she shared her confusion with me, and her confusion came still because she was still very focused on the senses. She was saying, I can see the sofa, and I can see me. And of course, she's looking down at her body. And she says, you know, so if the sofa, if I don't know that the sofa exists, how do I know that I exist? Because she was looking that she had the same evidence of both herself and her sofa, and that evidence was seen. And if seeing does not prove existence, then how does she even know that she exists? It's a great question. So I asked her, I said, well, don't you know that you exist? And she said, no, I don't. And I said, who's saying that? I said, don't you have to exist in order to say, no, I don't know that I exist? And for some reason, when I asked that question, something popped in her. I mean, this is the kind of thing that's miraculous, how these things happen. But something popped in her where suddenly she saw what I was talking about, even though she's obviously heard me talk about it innumerable times before. This time it clicked. And she was able to realize the existence, the isness that you can't see. But she was able to realize it, to know it. And then instantly she understood the difference between perception, which is like seeing, you know, the seeing the body, seeing the sofa, and the isness, which is not seen, but it's known. And we had a little bit of fun with it while she was still caught up in the experience. I asked her to pinch her finger kind of hard so that it hurt. And I asked her to notice that it's the body that feels the pain. It's the body that hurts, but it's not her. She doesn't feel any pain. And because she was very aware in that moment of who she was like, yeah, she could really tell that the body felt pain, but she didn't. And of course, this is what Ramana Maharshi talks about. If you read the story of when he had sarcoma, you know, the sarcoma was very, very painful. And, you know, someone asked him about that. You know, does a Janani, you know, an enlightened one or an awake one, feel pain? And he said, the body feels pain, but the Janani knows it like it's in a dream. And when you're aware of yourself, if you happen to do something like pinch your finger, you get a clear understanding of what he was trying to explain with words. Like, the pain is there, you're aware of the pain. But you also are very aware of the fact that you are not directly feeling the pain. That what you directly are has no pain. It's pretty amazing. So only that which is directly experienced is a known fact. Everything else is believed in. Why don't we scroll down and click on number 483? I'll also put that in the room. And I know these teachings are pretty repetitive, but somehow it was the repetitiveness that that caused a shift for me and may also for others. So let's look at number 483. Again, this is from Yoga Vasistha. Though the body notion is unreal, it is experienced as if it were real, just like the dream object. And of course, by the dream object here, he's referring to, you know, at night, the nighttime dream, you know, like if you've had that dream that so many people have had that, you know, you're back in your high school or your junior high and you're getting in your locker and you happen to look down and notice you're naked. Oh my God, I'm naked. You know, now what the heck am I going to do? I'm standing here in a school hallway and I'm naked. You know, while you're having that experience, every bit of that feels real. The locker feels real. The other people walking by in the hallway, your embarrassment, your desire to quickly hide, somehow hide from everyone. It all feels so real. But it's not. It doesn't matter how real it feels. It's not real. You know, I've never gone to school naked. So that's the dream object, of course, that he's talking about here. Though the body notion is unreal, it is experienced as if it were real, just like the dream object. And in fact, we may go look at my Facebook page in a moment because I posted something similar on Facebook today. But first, let's go to number 483 in my journal. And this is what I wrote after contemplating this quote. Although the body cannot be real if the world is not real, does the idea of body as real seem to be more of a fact than world as real? Now, I got to be honest, this is an inquiry that was really talking to me directly in the state of mind that I was at on May 31st. By this point, I had gone through a certain amount of this Seven Steps inquiry. There had been a certain amount of seeing that occurred, but other seeing had not yet come. And so, at the point where I was on May 31st, I was really beginning to accept that that which is outside of the body, like the stapler that I could reach up, pick up and hold with my hands, and I can see it, and I can feel that it's hard and it's kind of cool, you know, that this stapler was just perceived. I really had a clear understanding of that. But the body still, to me at that time, felt like a more direct experience. The body still felt more me. So that's, of course, what the question is asking. Although the body cannot be real if the world is not real, it can't be because the body is a part of the world, does the idea of body as real seem to be more of a fact than world as real? And I answered yes. And then the inquiry asked why. And remember, I've told you all that whenever the inquiry arises, not only does the inquiry arise, but the wisdom to give the answer arises with it. So I'm not trying to figure out the answer. So when I was asked why, I saw, because of personal identification. There is knowledge, and by knowledge I mean factual knowledge, directly known knowledge. And that directly known knowledge is, I am real. I exist. It's often just called, I am. But what I saw was the knowledge, I am real, is mistakenly projected onto the body as me. And this makes the body seem real, personally real, and therefore very important. It then becomes something that must be protected if I am to be safe, right? So, you know, this is really nice to look at because, you know, this gives a very, very nice clarity. There's a fact that exists, and it's a fact that's directly known by everyone. That fact is often called I am. It's the fact that I am, I exist. That is known. But then what happens is we take that fact and we mistakenly project it onto the body as me. And so this gives you a real clear idea why the body is maybe the toughest illusion to let go of. You know, you saw this, if you've read the Bible at all, you saw this in the Bible when Jesus was in the Garden of Gethsemane, especially if you're looking at the book of Mark. In the book of Mark, Jesus goes into the Garden of Gethsemane to pray because he's terrified of dying. Because, you know, the crucifixion's just right around the corner for him at this point. And he's terrified of dying. So he goes into the garden to pray. You know, and he says that famous sentence, that your will, not mine. Right? He has to have the cup taken away from him. But then he says, your will, not mine. And he comes out of the garden feeling prepared to face the next 24 hours of his life. But then when he comes out of the garden and he's back with Peter, John, and James, and he finds them sleeping, he gets upset at them because he had left them to guard him. He wanted his body guarded so he could pray without his body being arrested prematurely before it was ready. And he comes out and he finds they've fallen asleep and he's angry at them. And then he realizes he's angry at them because the attachment to the body is still there. The thought that probably went through his mind was something like, they were supposed to keep me safe while I prayed. And he probably realized that the me in that sentence was the body. So he realizes that he's has not completed this process of turning over his will. So he goes back into the garden a second time and he prays again. And he does the same thing. He turns everything over to God's will. And he comes out. He still finds them sleeping. And he still realizes this bothers him. He still wants them to be protecting his body. You know, and he says something like, oh, the spirit is willing, but the body is weak. And he goes back in and he prays a third time. And after the third time, it seems this is complete and he's able to move forward through the next 24 hours of his life without trying to save his body. But why, when Jesus was so incredibly enlightened, so incredibly clear, why was that body like the last obstacle? Well, this explains why. Because there's a fact, an actual fact. I am. I exist, I am real, and that fact gets projected onto the body, and we become confused thinking, I am the body, and I am real. And then the body is something that does not last. The body is just temporary. It's a dream figure. It's temporary, just like any other dream figure, just like the naked body in the hallway at the school. And so then we have a problem because we've projected our realness onto something temporary and has to be protected. And of course, fear is a part of the result of that projection. Now I'm just going to look at my Facebook page for a moment because I did post something on Facebook that is very related to this today. Some other people have been posting my wall, so I'm seeing their stuff. Okay, here's what I posted on Facebook today. This is actually also from my 7 Steps journal, but it's from number 705. It says, the interpretation, I am the body, is a false interpretation that reinforces delusion. The interpretation, the body is experienced, but I am not affected by it, is a helpful interpretation that points towards self-realization. This is what Danielle was noticing last Sunday night when I had her, you know, as she was aware of the self, when I had her pinch her finger and she noticed that the body felt pain, but she didn't. If we look back at 483, as Yoga Vasistha said it, Though the body notion is unreal, it is experienced as if it were real, just like the dream object. And again, what was written and posted on my wall from number 705 in the Seven Steps says, the idea that I am the body is a false interpretation that reinforces delusion. However, there's another interpretation that's more helpful, an interpretation that points toward truth. And that interpretation is, the body is experienced, but I am not affected by it. So what this means is we do not have to deny our headaches, for example. You know, course students, I know many course students have had that experience of having a headache and wanting to pretend like you don't somehow, wanting to deny your headache because, you know, you have this belief that somehow has come out of our study of the course that if you have a healed mind, which we misinterpret sometimes as if I'm good, that the body would not get sick. And so we see any kind of sickness, even a headache, as bad, and we try to deny it. And that's actually a mistake, because what's underneath that is still the belief I am the body. I'm taking my realness, I'm projecting it onto the physical body, and I'm thinking the physical body needs to be perfect, or else it means I'm in my wrong mind, which again, we still have a very subtle attachment, I'm bad. If I'm in my wrong mind, I'm bad, which is also an error. It's all screwed up. But then we go around trying to deny our headaches instead of just taking two aspirin and going on. The helpful interpretation. The body is experienced. I'm experiencing a headache. But what I am is not affected by it. And we can actually take that time. I have used pain in this way. I have used pain to notice the pain and then to turn inward to the I am, and to notice from that perspective that the pain is seen or experienced, but it is not direct. It is not a direct experience. The I am does not directly experience pain. And through that practice, through that use of pain, we come to know the difference between what we are, we feel the direct experience of it, and what we are not, because we start to really perceive the non-direct experience of the body, even pain. So again, the interpretation, I am the body, is a false interpretation that reinforces delusion. The interpretation, the body is experienced, but I am not affected by it, is a helpful interpretation that points towards self-realization. It's number 705 in my journal, and it's also posted on my Facebook wall today. For now, why don't we move on to number 484. So if you're still in 483, you can just scroll down and click on number 484. I will also post that in the room. Number 484 in the book, The Seven Steps to Awakening, says, even the original creation is like a dream. It is but an illusory appearance. Though devoid of earth and all the rest of it, it appears to have earth, etc. So why don't we look at my journal and see what I wrote after contemplating that. Number 484 in the journal. Before apparent... Oh, I remember this day so well. Before apparent creation of the universe, there was a thought, the primal thought, in which all of creation exists. However, this thought itself is an illusion. It has a beginning, and it seemed to result in change. Therefore, it is illusion and not changeless reality. Now, the reason I say I remember this day is for some reason, when the contemplation began to move in this direction, what I experienced was great fear. Great fear. And in fact, I remained in fear. This was June 1st. I remained in fear all the way up through June 9. which is when I left for Israel. I left for Israel then as well. And while I was in Israel, I did not go forward with the inquiry because I felt that I was pushing myself too hard, that my resistance was too strong. So instead of going forward with the inquiry and the contemplation, I spent my time in Israel going over all of the contemplation that had happened in step two up until I left for Israel and just reviewing it and staying with it. And when I came back and I was able to continue the seven steps without that resistance and without that fear. But yeah, Lynn has written, this is the tiny mad idea. And it cast us into terror, she says, which maybe explains my reaction. However, looking at it now without fear, this is logical. I mean, truth is also logical. That's the amazing thing about it. Sometimes the Course in Miracles refers to the Holy Spirit as reason with a capital R. There's some chapters that do that. And that's because there is a reasoning, a logical reasoning that can be seen in truth. Truth makes sense. I've already seen through the seven steps that there's an easy way to tell the difference between what is true and what is not true. In fact, at the beginning tonight, I talked about this keen discernment that I have developed as a result of working with the seven steps. And that keen discernment does not get confused by thinking some fantastic spiritual stories or spiritual experiences are truth. I don't have that confusion anymore. And here's the keen discernment. It's really simple. Truth is also simple, right? Isn't that what Jesus tells us in the Course? It's simple. It's simple and it's reasonable. It's logical. It makes sense. Truth is changeless and eternal. If you accept that, then it's also very easy to accept anything that is not changeless and not eternal is not true. Anything. You can test anything with this. It's the simplest test in the world. Anything that has a beginning and an end is not eternal. Therefore, it's not true. Anything that has a change in it is not changeless. Therefore, it's not true. You know, you can apply that test to anything. You know, lots of people believe in reincarnation as a truth. Now, I'm not saying that reincarnation is not a dream experience, because it may well be. I don't know for a fact, but I suspect it may well be. But there's a difference between a dream experience and a truth. How can you test to see if reincarnation is a truth? Well, if you're, you know, Lynn in this lifetime, and we take you to some hypnotist that tells you that you were, I don't know, pick a character, Mark Anthony, in a previous lifetime, doesn't that demonstrate a change? Isn't there a difference, a change between Mark Anthony and Lynn? So that cannot be a truth. It's the easiest test in the world. You will never be confused ever again between truth, between reality, that's what I mean by truth, and illusion, if you use those two criteria. So now let's look at the tiny mad idea. And again, the two criteria are it's eternal, which means it doesn't have a beginning and it doesn't have an end, and it's changeless. So let's look at the tiny mad idea. The tiny mad idea had a beginning. Therefore, it's not truth. It's the simplest thing in the world. And anything that appeared to come from the tiny mad idea, which, by the way, was apparent change from prior to the tiny mad idea, also had a beginning. There are many, many endings in that story. and lots of change. It's not true. It's the easiest thing in the world to discern. Not even the process of awakening, although it's a very helpful process and should not be abandoned, even that is not true. It doesn't pass the test. What is true has never changed. What is true has no beginning and has no end. So even these shifts that we experience as we appear to awaken, I used to see this way, now I see this way, that's good because this is what we would call the helpful illusion. It's the helpful illusion moving us back towards reality, but even awakening itself is an illusion. If you look at A Course in Miracles and the clarification of terms, it's very clear that forgiveness is an illusion. So before apparent creation of the universe, there was a thought. The primal thought, and in this thought, or because of this thought, that all of creation, all universes, all worlds, all lifetimes appear to exist. However, this thought itself is an illusion. It has a beginning, and it seemed to result in change. Therefore, it is illusion, and it is not changeless reality. Do you see how simple perfect discernment is? It is not difficult at all. You don't need to be fooled ever again if you don't want to be, between what is true and what is not true. Now that doesn't mean, again, some of the not true is helpful. But still, you can easily tell the difference between what is true and what is not true. All right, if you scroll down and click on number 485, Number 45 in the book, The Seven Steps to Awakening, says, "The original dreamlike creation of the world and also the dream that we experience now are both unreal." And based on what I just taught, you can see how that's easily true. You know, the original dreamlike creation of the world, so that original tiny mad idea experience and however that whole thing unfolded. I believe, you know, I haven't listened to a lot of Ken Wapnick, but I believe Ken Wapnick has a great story, which of course he gets from his contemplation of the Course about, you know, what happened and how we came to have what appears to be a world and what appears to have bodies, right? And that is whole story is a helpful story, but that whole story is not true. It's not true. It may be a part of the dream, but it's not true. We don't want to confuse metaphysics with truth. It's part of the dream. It's part of after we fell asleep. So that original dreamlike creation, that whole tiny mad idea story, and also the dream that we experience now, which seems to be a full-fledged world, are both untrue. That's what the Yoga Vasistha is saying. Neither one of them is true. Don't get confused and think that metaphysics are truth. Truth is before metaphysics, outside of metaphysics. So if we look at 485 in my journal, the extension that some would call the creation of universe, galaxies, and world is merely the extension of dream. It is called dream because it isn't permanent reality. Okay, so again, we're getting into the keen discernment here. Let's scroll down and click on number 486. I'll read from 486 first in the Seven Steps to Awakening. There is no death. And by the same token, there is no birth either. I love that, because we do focus a lot sometimes in A Course in Miracles and even on NTI about there is no death, there is no death. And that, of course, is because, you know, we tend to fear death. So there's a lot of focus in our teachings about there is no death. But Yoga Vasistha is very clear. There is no death, and by the same token, there is no birth either. Because that also would be a beginning and a change. It doesn't pass the test. Birth is illusory as death. They are equally illusory, equally not true. It's not like birth was real, but death is false. They're both false. No birth. Let's look at 486 in my journal. Those who say the world is real because it appears real take its appearances to be real also. In a real world, there would be birth and death, the spontaneous beginning and end of life. Yet life has no beginning and no end, therefore the world appearance cannot be real. Somewhere in my journal, much earlier in step two, there was an inquiry that I went through about birth. And about asking, in the inquiry it asked if I was born. And, you know, I remember something in the inquiry about me saying, well, my mother says I was. She says she was there. And that's true, because I've had that conversation with her since I've started this line of spiritual study. You know, much earlier I talked to her about that, about how, you know, we are eternal and there is no birth. And this is way before I had any true understanding of that, so maybe I shouldn't even have been talking about it, but I was. We all do before we know what we're talking about. And my mom said to me, you know, you were too born. I was there. She remembers. She remembers the pain of the labor pain. You were too born. I was there. Well, what I saw in the inquiry that happened earlier in step two was that actually my mother was just expressing a belief, thinking that her belief was a fact. Again, because this illusion seems so real, because we've taken the fact, not the idea, because we've taken the fact, I am, and we've projected it onto the body, and we think, I am the body. And then she has an experience of her body with another body growing in it and then coming out of it. She believes there was a beginning there. But that does not prove a beginning. It's all perception. It is not direct experience. And in fact, she would have had no idea at all about the difference between direct experience and indirect experience. So she confuses indirect experience, perception, with direct experience, isness. If you get clear on the difference between direct experience and indirect experience, you will realize you cannot prove the beginning of life even if you give birth. Because you will begin to realize in a very honest and real way, not at the level of belief, because the level of belief is useless. You will begin to realize that even giving birth is an indirect experience. That your direct experience never changes. It's the same isness prior to pregnancy. It's the same isness during pregnancy. And it's the same isness after the birth. It has never changed. Therefore, you have no proof that the isness that appears to be your child went through any change either. To believe in birth is a belief. Those who say the world is real because it appears real take its appearances to be real also. In a real world, there would be birth and death, the spontaneous beginning and end of life. Yet life has no beginning and no end. Therefore, the world appearance cannot be real. Even birth itself, not only is death a belief, But even birth itself is a belief, not a fact, not directly experienced. So let's go ahead and click on number 487. Number 487 in the Seven Steps to Awakening says, realize that this world appearance, with all its contradictions, is nothing more than appearance, which is non-existent. Again, realize that this world appearance, with all its contradictions, is nothing more than appearance, which is non-existent. All right, let's look at 487 in the journal. One believes the world is real because one wants to believe the world is real. One wants to believe the world is real because one wants to believe I am this body. However, without the world, there is no body. Therefore, attachment to I am this is attachment to the world also. This goes back to the discussion we had earlier about Jesus in the Garden of Gethsemane and how he had to go into the garden three times in order to let go of his attachment to the body. Our attachment to the body is very strong because we have taken a fact, I am, and projected it onto the body and created a belief, I am this body. And that makes the body very, very important. And the body, of course, is a part of the world. It's a part of the dream, just like the naked body in the locker is a part of the dream, right? Or the naked body by the locker is a part of the dream. So without the world, the body does not exist. And because we've taken the I am and projected it onto the body and made the body important, that by default also makes the world important. So we're attached to the world because we're attached to the body, because we've projected a fact onto the body. Because attachment to I am this is strong, it is prudent to look at the world attachment first. As a secondary attachment to I am this, it is the attachment more easily broken. And yet, because there cannot be a body without a world, breaking attachment to world also breaks attachment to I am this. So what this is saying is, again, the most direct attachment that we have is our attachment to the body. That's what we've projected our isness onto and believed I am this. The world is important because the body is important, but the world is actually a secondary attachment, not a primary attachment. Therefore, it is much easier to begin to look at and inquire about the world. It's easier to look at and inquire, does this stapler exist, than it is to inquire, does this body exist? So if we begin to inquire about the world first and we come to see that we cannot verify the existence of the world, we come to see that the world is not a direct experience, that realization at an honest level then opens us up to true inquiry regarding the body. But it's easier to start by inquiring about the world first, is what this says, because that's only a secondary attachment. And in fact, that's, if you've paid any attention to the seven steps inquiry that I've gone through, that's exactly what's been happening. We haven't paid a lot of attention to the body yet, a little bit, but not a lot. There's been a lot more attention paid to asking, you know, how do I know the difference between direct experience and perception? So we're beginning at the level of noticing that I cannot verify the world is real like I can verify I am, right? So let me just read this one more time and then we'll stop because we're out of time. So number 487 in the journal. One believes the world is real because one wants to believe the world is real. One wants to believe the world is real because one wants to believe I am this body. However, without the world, there is no body. Therefore, attachment to I am this is attachment to the world also. Because attachment to I am this is strong, it is prudent to look at the world attachment first. As a secondary attachment to I am this, it is the attachment more easily broken. And yet, because there cannot be a body without a world, breaking attachment to world also breaks attachment to I am this. All right, so that's it for me tonight. You guys have a wonderful evening, and I'll see you around. Bye.